Greetings, and thank you for joining us. Dale and John here, sharing with you observations and insights from our experiences as a part of GESPCU, the University of All Things Guaranteed Energy Savings Performance Contracting.
On this podcast, we'll be diving into the investment grade audit. Because of the highly technical or esoteric nature of the IGA, it's important the owner has a resource with appropriate experience and expertise, whether in-house or third-party, to provide guidance that will ensure that all aspects are understood and appropriately addressed.
We'll be presenting a methodology that follows the Energy Services Coalition model documents that we've all come to know as best practice, as assembled from the nation's most successful state models. However, it's understood that different states, different end users, different market providers have their own specific processes to develop a performance contracting project. What we'll be sharing is our perspective on fulfilling an investment grade audit and project proposal that leads to maximum transparency and clarity of information in order to build consensus between the project owner and ESCO and heighten the confidence of project success.
In previous meetings between owner and ESCO, some of the more obvious measures, like lighting, water devices, and steam traps, may have already been agreed to as a result of a complete survey, inventory, and assessment of what's existing by specialty contractors engaged by the ESCO. By now, the ESCO should also have proposed to the owner bringing on these specialty contractors with which they have a preferred, trusting professional relationship. In a perfect scenario, this concept of preferred specialty contractors was disclosed and agreed to as part of the ESCO solicitation and selection. Regardless, it's important to note here that when the ESCO does accept the specialty contractor's scope, cost, and savings projections for their inclusion in the IGA, the ESCO owns the responsibility of the measure, its scope, its cost, savings, and performance.
That's right, John. So now, the ESCO begins the task of gathering the same level of detailed information about other measures that the owner and ESCO agreed to pursue as part of the outcomes of the preliminary findings meeting. Some of that work may include the collection of additional pre-construction data for the additional measures under consideration. This could be flow and temperatures, consumption and load or variable load analysis, either spot or short-term monitoring, with the end goal to validate or, if necessary, update the preliminary load attributions. Now, the scope of the project needs to be defined well enough to acquire reasonable pricing for each measure. Simultaneously, the energy engineering team must identify the utility, operational, and maintenance savings to determine which measures make the final cut for the project proposal. Integrating these two needs into project development is an ongoing exchange of information and iterative thinking to arrive at the ultimate list of measures that fit the project.
Well, this is where the engineering effort really kicks into high gear. ESCO engineering teams are extremely adept at conducting this investment grade level assessment and verification of current equipment status and operating parameters. This level of detail provides the ESCO the appropriate level of information to establish a credible baseline of current utility, operations and maintenance, use and cost to which forthcoming utility and utility cost savings calculations will compare.
Oh, I wholly agree, John. The ESCO engineering teams are really good at this. At this point, they've already gathered field data of equipment such as connected loads, variable loads, operating parameters, etc. During this more detailed analysis phase, the ESCO will refine this data, perhaps through additional data logging or additional field measurements, to the confidence level that they can quite accurately calculate the current utility consumption of the equipment impacting each individual energy conservation measure. In the case of electrical consumption, the engineers will separately analyze both energy, kWh, and demand, or kW, impacts. In other words, the baseline utility use. Using the detailed utility consumption and cost information previously gathered and analyzed through extensive utility bill review, the ESCO has developed mutually agreeable baseline utility unit costs for electricity, other fuels such as natural gas, water, sewer, and the like. Once the engineering team has completed the utility use analysis, they apply the baseline utility costs to calculate the baseline utility costs for each individual measure to be included in the project and ultimately the entire project.
That's right, Dale. Now, using the operating parameters for the recommended new equipment and appropriate operating strategies, the ESCO can perform a similar exercise to calculate this equipment's predicted utility use. By applying the baseline utility unit costs, then, the new equipment's utility use costs are calculated for each measure. Technically, the difference between the baseline utility use and cost and the new utility use and cost results in the calculated first year savings for each measure and the total project. Because there may remain some unknowns, it's not uncommon for the ESCO to temper the calculated cost savings by applying a factor that will result in high confidence guaranteed cost savings. This may be called a number of different things, including conservation factor, safety factor, or diversity, to list a few.
So, John, we've arrived at the point where the ESCO has designed solutions for each measure. The ESCO now needs to reach out to the subcontractor trades to gather prices for the work defined. By way of an example of this defined work, let's consider a single rooftop HVAC unit. The ESCO in this example has concluded that the unit can be a one-for-one replacement, same cooling, dehumidification capacities, same ability to provide X amount of fresh air. The ESCO should have discussed brand selection with the owner by now. If the owner doesn't require a specific brand, then the ESCO may solicit bids from equipment manufacturers based upon an equipment specification, efficiency, and other considerations. So in our example, the ESCO will be buying the equipment. Then the ESCO would develop the complete and detailed scope of work that would be required of the subcontractor. This could include things like receiving, storing, and setting in place, along with disconnection and reconnection of electrical supply, and even what will be required to remove from the ductwork and the reconnection of the new unit. The new unit may require some form of collar or transition and the appropriate configuration back upon the roof mounting, and any required adapting to connect and seal with both the supply and return air ductwork. The ESCO may or may not require the replacement of the electrical disconnect and would take on the responsibility of listing any and all other work required, all the necessary appurtenances or accessories to connect with control systems or thermostats. They would likely then incorporate into the measure scope of work any refrigerant capture from the old system and disposal of refrigerant charging required for the new system, along with testing, owner operation, maintenance training, system startup, and warranty responsibility. Whew. And finally, even the disposition or disposal of the old proposed to be replaced system. This sort of very detailed specification would be assembled, reviewed, and approved by the owner and prepared for distribution. This same level of detail in this example would be drawn up by the ESCO for all measures and developed into solicitations or invitations to propose to a select group of subcontractors as agreed to by the owner for the proposal. Upon receipt of the proposals, then, the responses would be reviewed by the ESCO and the owner, and there would be a determination and selection of the best value for the project.
Well, Dale, that certainly is a detailed approach to a very common process. But in order to illustrate that project development is not just a one-way-fits-all methodology, we're going to now share a bit of an alternative approach. In this example, the ESCO and the owner are in fundamental agreement about the energy conservation measures that they'd like to be included in the project as a result of the preliminary analysis, the field investigative work, and certainly the input of the owner and the occupants. The owners indicated they have no real brand allegiances or preferences, but are simply seeking a great value. So I'll outside of the work and scope of the specialty contractors, the ESCO assembles what's known as a performance specification to solicit to design build contractors. This would look more like a broad-based description of a device or system offering an opportunity for input by the subcontractors. A general description and configuration of a measure would be defined and would be accompanied by an invitation for the subcontractors to provide a very detailed scope of what they believe to be the best value solution. Accessories, appurtenances, valves, where work specifically starts and stops, what disconnects to replace, wiring to modify, controls to add or alter, all of it. Along with this very inclusive proposal would be the subcontractor's price to do the work. In this procurement example, the owner in the ESCO then would sort through the different proposals to determine and select the best options for the owner's needs. All the solutions proposed by the ESCO would need to be accompanied by utility, operation, and maintenance considerations and likely a statement of benefits of why this proposal should be considered the best value for the owner's needs.
And now, regardless of the approach, the owner and the ESCO must come to a mutual agreement on the appropriate solutions for each measure. With this set of measures, the ESCO is required to finalize all savings and payback calculations and offer for consideration the suggested measurement and verification methodology to scientifically demonstrate the achieved savings. That's not a simple task either. All of the impacting variables, load usage profiles, standards of comfort need to be taken into account to calculate the projected new utility consumption, operation and maintenance costs, how they relate to the existing systems, and therefore the proposed avoided costs or savings. It's important that the ESCO not only document the calculations, assumption, engineering considerations that lead them to their conclusions, but that they also explain the illustration of engineering and math at a level that reviewers can understand what they're being asked to agree to for project success. Regardless of the process, the ESCO should guide to the solutions that provide the value intended for the project and the owner. Said simply, the work of the ESCO team should meet or exceed the quality of any other work done through any other construction or installation methodology in their institution. If a state agency, university, school, or city has process, procedures, guides, and forms, even their own construction contract templates, the owner needs to make certain that these requirements to abide by those standards, processes, or installation and construction contracts are a part of the ESCO solicitation for the project. I've often heard state landlord agencies voice concern over inheriting the work of a GESPC project that didn't follow their traditional processes, forms, or other considerations. There's just no need for this concern if the requirements are included up front for all the parties' awareness.
Knowing they'll be required to verify the guaranteed utility cost savings on an annual basis, the ESCO must develop an appropriate measurement and verification process for each individual measure and ultimately the entire project. At this juncture, they select to propose one of the four MNV options as provided by the International Performance Measurement and Verification Protocol, or IPMVP, to be used to validate the annual guaranteed cost savings on a measure-by-measure and total project basis. It's very important that the owner understands their potential risk level for each of the options. If the owner doesn't have this level of expertise, once again, it's highly recommended they obtain knowledgeable third-party counsel in this regard. The decisions made at this point will forever be in place for the duration of the performance period.
What we've touched on lightly here includes topics like pricing, which are impacted things like warranty management and commissioning, construction practices and methodology, measurement and verification, all of which we'll dedicate some deeper dives to in another podcast. Well, that wraps us up for now. Join us next time as we continue our walk through project development and the final touches on an investment grade audit and project proposal. GESPCU, see you next time.